and welcome to the DC Assembled podcast, the official podcast for the Big Glasgow Comic Page, where we talk about the latest comics, movies, television, and other pieces of nerd culture. I am your host for this episode, Massimo Castelli, and on today's interview special, we are interviewing a writer whose latest Kickstarter for Buzzard Issue 3 was funded in just 2 days, smashing its goal to pieces, and is currently still available to back. We'd like to welcome to the show the awesome Andrea Wolf.
Well, I was not ready to for how professional that sounded, man.
Honestly, catch everyone by surprise. It's great. So, could you tell the listeners a little bit about yourself, Andrea?
Yeah. Well, thanks for having me. First of all,
of course.
I'm a writer. I've got a background in film. Filmmaking, that's where one of my biggest passions. I also really like basketball. That's completely irrelevant, but it's something that I really like. And Buzzard is my first comic, the first thing I've ever published. Came out two and a half years ago. Now, first issue was funded on Kickstarter, and we are on to issue 3, as you mentioned.
So it's a nice kind of wholesome story of someone kind of getting into the comics media and then kind of exploding with their kind of first Kickstarter. But like, how did you get into kind of comics and the comic writing process in the first place from coming from a background of film? How did you get into that?
I should have probably said I've always loved comics since I grew up reading comics. I think pretty much as soon as I could read, I started reading comics. I was big on Spider-Man. When I was little, I still remember one issue with the Lizard was probably one of the first things that I ever read. My mum thought it was probably too violent, but I didn't mind. In fact, I used to be arachnophobic when I was little, and I kid you not, man, I think that Spider-Man cured me.
I love that. Superheroes curing illnesses are kind of phobias.
Yeah, no, definitely. I could not be in the same room with a spider. But then I started reading Spider-Man.
Clearly.
And I just did not feel the same way anymore. I was like, oh, they're kind of cute. That's
it. You know, the eight-legged wall crawlers. We absolutely love them. You know, I mean, Spider-Man myself was my kind of first comic as well when I was growing up as well. My mum probably had the same thing of, this is a little bit violent, but we'll let him have it because he enjoys this stuff, and it's now turned into a now lifelong obsession with comic books and all comic book things based, and it's great. It's lovely. It's just become exactly. So obviously you're here to talk about your latest Kickstarter for the third issue of Buzzard. Has kind of Kickstarter in general been helping you, like really been helping you get your comic off the ground, or has it kind of been more of a hindrance than a help in a way?
Well, I wouldn't have a comic without Kickstarter. The only other way would have been to fund it myself, but the biggest struggle for me is actually to reach out to promote it, to find the audience. And Kickstarter has given me a chance to start building a little bit of a fan base and to have people that I can somewhat reliably count on supporting issue after issue. Comic cons were huge as well. Like I was so amazed by how well like comic cons went when I started doing them, which was nerve-wracking. I mean, the whole thing has been nerve-wracking from the get-go. But Kickstarter has been mostly helpful. It's still tough, and it's still extremely stressful because I'm just not good at pitching. I'm not good at promotion. I'm not good at marketing. I don't like being on social media and all that stuff. But you've got to do it.
Of course, it's one of those things. We're the same as a podcast, having to promote yourselves out to people is always that thing, and it's just so many different like aspects you don't even think about beforehand. But I think a big help for you, and if you don't mind me saying this, was the fact that Mark Miller tweeted about your Kickstarter, and that really almost kind of, I assume, kind of kicked it into gear almost in a way.
That was so surreal. And he's done it again. He's done it again.
Yeah, like again.
A couple of days ago. I don't know if you saw that. Like, he retweeted picture I sent him of Buzzard issue 2, because I actually gave him a little, because he helped funding it effectively by tweeting about the campaign for issue 2 back in October, going like, this guy's Kickstarter on his official like Twitter page, which was the probably the most successful comic author on the planet today. But he's such a nice dude. I met him at he was giving a talk, and I was so anxious just even approaching him, and he was just like the sweetest guy. And yeah, and then one day I just thought, hey, you know, I just thought I'd tweet him and I'd send him a tweet, and sure enough, he just retweeted me, which was incredible. And he did it again like a couple of days ago.
That's incredible. Like, I feel like as well, like, because kind of Scottish, like even comic book community like yourself, because obviously you said you live in Edinburgh now and you kind of were from Glasgow originally. The comic book community in Scotland is very tight knit, and I feel like a lot of people, it's almost like they really want to help people succeed. And I've talked to other creators. I talked to on a podcast last week, Mark Abnett, who he got his start in writing comics in a Miller World annual doing a Hit Girl story. So I feel like a few people I've talked to so far have definitely been praising Mark Miller simply because he's been given, like, almost kickstarting some people a little bit, like giving their careers almost a little bit of a rejuvenation, a boost, which I think is a great thing for Scotland in general and the comic community itself.
That is what it should be about. Like, you know, just you get to the top, put a rope down for for other people, and he seems to be that kind of guy who
exactly you get to. Yeah, so obviously with your Kickstarter, the latest one being funded in just 2 days, and we kind of had this kind of talk about social media and stuff. And before we mentioned the idea of kind of like these kind of almost like cult and Uber fans who kind of really get the highest tier of your Kickstarter and stuff. What is it like having almost this kind of, I guess you could almost have a cult status among certain comic fans or people who decide to do Kickstarter? What is that like as a person? Like, you're like, oh, wow, people really like my work and are willing to pay X amount of money to help me fund it.
I honestly don't feel like that. Like that at all. I don't feel like I'm at the status at the point where I've got a cult status. I mean, but I do have a few people who are very invested, and I guess that is amazing. I'm just incredibly grateful. Like there are a few guys who have been with me like since before I started that are just so supportive and devoted. And but one of the biggest things, like some reviewers are really invested in Buzzard. Comic Book News UK, for instance, and Monkeys Fighting Robots, which is quite a big website from what I understand. And they loved it, and they just every time they get a chance to promote it and talk about it, they do. And it's always so enthusiastic, and that as well as people like being willing to give me like by big chunks of the no doubt hard earned money, you know, it's amazing. It's absolutely like heartwarming, because I didn't even know. I had the idea for the comic maybe 7 years ago, and for the longest time did nothing with it, so I didn't really know if this was ever going to be a thing. And for it to be a thing and for it to have a following and people like getting invested in it and feel, you know, it's incredible. It's
a real experience for you.
It's really surreal, yeah. And sometimes you send it to places like the Netherlands and Sweden and the US, and
you've got fans all over the globe. I love that. But obviously, talking about the Kickstarter of Buzzard and the character itself, the whole kind of story feels like this almost love letter to British satire. And I don't know, I picked up on this, like kind of ideas of punk and anarchism, those kind of ideas. And how did this kind of come about? How did these ideas kind of manifest eventually in the story that would become Buzzard?
Well, I guess it's just stuff that was going through my head and just like things that I started noticing and just a way of my way of thinking that I was really craving for a way to express it. And you know, just a kind of like this mad these mad considerations about society and just how absurd everything really is once you actually stop and think about it, and especially in the UK, I feel like there are so many contradictions that are blatant and never talked about enough. I think that's part of like British humour is it has a lot to do with remarking on those on that craziness. In a way that's subtle and almost takes it for granted.
It is really like, but British humour almost antagonises the situation that you find yourself in to the point where it makes it just kind of really surreal and stupid. Including that kind of that first few panels of Buzzard when there's that thing of him basically being mugged and he just completely rips into the situation. Like, absolutely no fear from the guy, and it's like, I'm not going to spoil it for people who haven't read the first issue, and they should definitely, if they have an option, pick it up as part of the Kickstarter or whatever it is. It is one of those moments if you're like, well, how would a normal, like, you know, if you see a superhero react to this, they would beat off the marker. If a normal person done this, they'd be cowering fear. Nah, Buzzard just rips into the guy and makes a rape joke. It's really, or makes a joke about, right? Like, it does feel like it's very British, and it has very Britishisms, like, even though I'm from Scotland and not from London, where the book is set, it felt like it could very hit home with the way how it was funny. It was dry. It was good. And, like, would you say there are any...
That gets me in trouble.
Yeah. It is... Obviously, it's all in good satirical fun. But would you say there are any kind of main influences on Buzzard's story overall? Like, is there anything you would say you kind of maybe drew from or kind of considered when you were writing the story for the first time?
Well, look, dude, in terms of style, like, there are comics. I just, like Transmetropolitan by Warren Ellis, that really made me think, oh my gosh, you can really do a lot of weird stuff with comics. You can be really bonkers and just go all out. And that's kind of what I'm striving for. Like, I'm trying to do something that kind of like pushes the envelope a little bit, and that doesn't really like try to have filters. So that is a bit refreshing, because I feel like everything tends to be a bit stale these days, and like I'm playing it safe, but I'm not really, I don't think that's as exciting as when you feel like a real need to communicate and just go all crazy with ideas. But Deadpool is definitely another one, another inspiration, and also manga. Like you've read the comics. There's a lot of like a lot of the humor is drawn from manga style. It's very emotional, like over the top. The expressions, and obviously like the artwork helps so much with that, because I'm lucky to collaborate with an incredible artist.
That's what I was going to ask you, was was there a decision particularly behind going for a manga-esque kind of style in book? Or was it just like you happened to go for that and it'd be like, oh, this is definitely what fits perfectly? Or was it like kind of premeditated beforehand? You're like, okay, I really want to make it kind of look like manga, or kind of look like kind of similar kind of style?
Yeah, I really wanted a blend between the superhero style comics, like the American style, and a manga style. But I just didn't know if I was going to be able to find an artist that I could afford who would be able to bring that together. And then I found Ezekiel, and he's just gone, like, he's just gone like above and beyond my wildest hopes. He's an absolute pleasure to work with. I really feel like I need to give him a proper shout out, because he's just elevates the whole thing, and it's such a pleasure to work with, man. You've got no idea, like, he brings so many ideas and he's so dedicated, and every time like I'm telling him, like, everyone loves your work, everyone thinks it's amazing, they're all praising it all the time, it's so energetic and crisp, and he's always like, hey, yeah, but I should have probably done.
He always wants to improve his work.
I should have probably fixed that panel. Oh, that didn't quite look right. Next time we're going to do it better. It's just like, what more do you want from a guy?
The art is very striking, to be fair. And obviously, I assume you've decided to do the full kind of series. Is it black and white, or are you going to plan on color? Is it colored later on, or like, what is the situation with that at the moment? Because obviously the copies I got are entirely black and white. And is that a decision stylistically from your point to do, or are you planning on maybe reaching like a coloured version later on down the line?
Again, like as far as I'm concerned, I really like it in black and white. I think.
Oh, no, I think it's great. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, but I do get that a lot. I wouldn't be against it being coloured, but I think stylistically it fits because again, it's a throwback to manga.
Yeah.
And also to things like Sin City. I think it really, really works with like. Just because, like you said, it's so crazy, like what actually goes on. But then to have this simple style that, and then the fact that black and white makes it feel very simple. But then you have that contrast with what transpires from the characters and from the situations that is so excessive. I think that creates a quite an interesting contrast between really simple and really over the top.
I would say. It definitely lends itself to this almost, as you said, like simplicity, but it makes it almost more brutal when these act, because almost the lack of colour makes it more visceral.
Yeah.
Especially when you have the things where like Eric or Buzzard or what you know his name is, like he's beating people up and there's a very vivid thing from issue 2, I believe, where he's fighting someone in a tunnel and it's very kind of brutalist. And I feel like, as you said, it works because of the simplicity of it. Like, it doesn't have this big full colour splash on it. It's very black and white, Ben and Miller's, but also makes it more brutal in a sense. Mm. But yeah,
it's more grounded in a way, isn't it?
Like, it's more gritty, more grounded. And kind of, obviously, speaking of Eric as a character, you kind of made him this kind of smart arse and loudmouth anti-hero. Where did you decide at the point of when you were writing, like, or when did you decide it at all, when you decided to go for an anti-hero rather than going for something that's like a traditional hero comic, you know? So rather than making a superhero that's London, like maybe like a Captain Britain or whatever, that kind of thing, where do you decide to go for almost like a London-esque, your kind of equivalent of an anti-hero, kind of your Red Hoods, your kind of Deadpools, all those kind of characters? Like, when did you decide to do that? Yeah. Was that at the start or kind of throughout the process?
The thing is, I think that people who are not, we try to ignore a certain side of society. I think that's the, you know, the visceral truth about the world we live in. So I wanted a character to be from that environment, and someone who does not does not relate to society in the same way that, you know, the higher middle class would. Yeah. Someone who's got different priorities that are a lot more
normal, almost
disenfranchised, and have nothing to do with ethics. And I did not want to, you know. I think Eric is a representation of a shadow of society that's best not looked at.
I definitely think
that definitely exists. Yeah,
yeah, I definitely think I agree. It is one of those things is that like he is a shadow of kind of. It's all that thing of you say, oh, the whole holds a dark mirror up to society and stuff like that. But obviously, in a sense, Buzzer does that, but by being very satirical and very funny, but also presenting some of the kind of almost unknown or kind of like not as like kind of light shed upon elements of life. And I think you do that a great job through the characters of Buzzer, who are from such a diverse like bunch of various backgrounds and stuff like that. Like, you obviously got Cal, who's like a hitman, veteran hitman, but is a drug addict and stuff like that. And you've got the eggheads who are like two like very scientific minded people who kind of help Eric kind of recover after he suffers a very bad injury in issue 1, which I don't want to spoil because it is very brutal and also very kind of well done with the kind of art style and the kind of position. It was just such a great scene, especially the way how it comes about as well. I don't want to spoil too much, but it is just one of those things of like, it sticks in my mind as to being like one of those kind of great almost origin scenes. But yeah, so did that naturally come about, having all these diverse characters in this story? Or was that because you knew by setting it in London, you had to have diverse characters? Like, you weren't planning on whitewashing it. You were planning on having all these different characters from different backgrounds.
Yeah, that's it, man. I set it in London, and you know, anyone who's been in London, they'll know how diverse the city really is. And so I was trying to stay true to life, and that's why I made it diverse. It wasn't for any other big reason other than to make it realistic.
Yeah.
But back to why Yeah, I always wanted Eric to be an anti-hero, because I just thought it just gave me a lot more leeway to show and do things with him that are, you know, completely that a hero would. I'll say it like this, you know, as much as I love Spider-Man and all traditional superheroes, it comes a point when you grow up, when you just look at it and you just realize that it just does not cut it. That's not how the world works. It can be inspirational, but it's got nothing to do with real life. Spider-Man himself, I mean, poor guy, like, he's gone through a lot, but he never learns a thing.
It's just the same thing over it, yeah.
He's got this like, he's mental, like, he's a chaotic character because he's got, like, this incredible weight of responsibility. Like, in real life, Peter Parker would probably be riddled with anxiety and depression.
Exactly. It'd be all over the place. The thing is, as well, like
3 times a week.
Yeah, it'd be like just a messed up character overall. Like, we were having this conversation on a podcast previously of At Heroes, and we talked about how when, obviously, Red Hood, when Jason Todd gets killed by the Joker, why does Batman not fly off the rails and just murder the Joker? Why does he then just be like, no, I must keep to my no killing rule, even though he beat my teenage sidekick to death with a crowbar? Like, there's time for morals in characters. Like, there is obviously good and bad, but it's nice to have characters that exist in that nice gray area that between them that are able to make the tough decisions.
Zack Snyder would definitely agree with you on that. but I think I wanted to create a character that was informed by, like, those heroes who just kind of realized that would not work for him and his situation in the modern world. And it is kind of like a commentary on how we grew out of that naivete of you know, black and white situations, and like you mentioned, like, it's, things are a lot more gray, and, you know, sometimes you just gotta survive, and that's
exactly, yeah.
And try to see the funny side of life, even though it's a complete shit show.
Exactly, yeah. Especially for Eric, who goes through a lot of changes in the first issue of like, he still has a big smile on his face.
Yeah,
like, I mean, I can.
I love that about him. He's so cheerful.
He's so cheerful and witty. But talking like more kind of about the dialogue and kind of the way that characters talk in the book, it is a lot of regional and colloquial speak. When you kind of wrote it, like, it's obviously plain, obviously, English, but, like, when you use certain things, like, use certain terminology and certain things that are very colloquial to London and kind of the rest of the UK, did you feel like when you were writing it that you might accidentally, in a way, isolate, like, foreign audiences when you were kind of writing, or did that kind of, like, cross your mind, and you said, nah, okay, I think that people are going to love this, or they're going to, like, enjoy it anyway for what it is, even if they maybe don't always get what's being said by the characters, in a way?
Well, that was the hope, but I definitely it's definitely a concern, and I think it's a true problem for some audiences. But it would have been at the expense of authenticity, I thought, you know, enough people will likely get the humor and just the gist of it, and you can always Google, like, a colloquialism that you didn't know before. So there you go, educational.
Exactly, Your brutal book about a hitman anti-hero was educational. Just brand that on the cover.
But it can definitely be a barrier. I don't think that can be helped, and that's okay.
But you even said that you were still getting all copies, like, people order it from Sweden, Netherlands, and stuff like that. So clearly, it's not been that much of an issue, or you've managed to be so broad with your colloquial meaning that you've managed to reach a big audience.
So some people like to take chances and challenge themselves, and that's awesome. I appreciate them.
Exactly. Appreciate being able to back the book. So here's an interesting one, and I don't know if you've had this. Obviously, you've only had maybe one interview or whatever, but, and you can tell me this, not, you can tell me this, you don't need to tell me this. Are there any characters in the book who are based off of people you know, or take kind of aspects of people you know, or would you get yourself completely berated by your friends or anyone you know for me asking that, you responding?
Well, I can tell you Cal I'm not in touch with them anymore. So I can tell you Cal is definitely based off my the guy I used to buy weed from back at uni.
Nice, nice. Of course.
Guy from Luton, absolute legend of a guy, and like a lol, and completely like off his head. the way he talked and carried himself definitely inspired Cal. Matt is loosely based off a friend of mine as well, but I think she would only be happy to know that because Matt is
oh, awesome. Matt is great. Oh yeah.
Matt is so brilliant. Good, yeah. Sometimes I worry that Matt is too good. Like I'm trying to like make it clear that she's vulnerable and she's got issues, yeah. And that, you know, living with an assassin or brother is no bed of roses.
It's not easy. it's not an easy lifestyle to have where you don't know where your siblings gonna, yeah. You know, I'll even say that. I even say that in the kind of first like few, like when you introduced Matty, where it's like, yeah, you said you picked me up at 12 3 months ago, like haven't lived this kind of like almost like unstable, unpredictable lifestyle with her brother, which is nice though. As you said, like it does give her almost this vulnerability as well as she still is a kid, and you portray that very well with your writing. I must say, with your dialogue and the writing of the character.
Cheers, thanks, man. Nah. Who's your favorite character?
Oh man, I am a big fan of Cal, to be honest, and really? just because he seems like, obviously he says he's a veteran and stuff like that. But it's just the way how, like, and I think it's issue two where he talks about, oh yeah, no, like, you should be start calling me Sensei and stuff like that. Like he feels almost like he knows that he's an assassin, he knows that his line of work is very dangerous, but that doesn't stop him from absolutely ripping the piss with Eric and like, completely being, like, a bit of an arsehole, but, like, charming, you know? Yeah. Also, the fact he's an addict is always an interesting thing to throw in the book. And you even see him smoke a crack pipe as well at some point in the book, or is that again, you really like to push the envelope with what these characters are doing on the page. And yeah, he's a great fun character, and I feel like I wouldn't mind having him as my friend or even my dealer in real life.
He is an ass, but he's a teddy bear down exactly, deep underneath. Yeah. He really needs a friend, so I'm sure he'd exactly. love to hang out with you.
Exactly, yeah, of course. Yeah, but like that's the thing as well, is that you do make these characters who on the surface are people who are basically arseholes, but underneath it all are very endearing and very charming. Like have this like thing about them where they're like, well, I think I could be friends with this person if I could get past all the insulting and bullshit that they have and also the terrible kind of people they are. Yeah. Which is great. I think one of my other questions I have for you, and this will definitely spoil a little bit the first issue. Why Nazis?
Right, so I don't think you can do a modern satire without talking about Nazis.
Yeah, that's entirely fair. Yeah,
just because like the term, like the idea is thrown around so often in one way or another, you have to comment on it.
Yeah, totally.
You know, because like there's Nazis on the left, there's Nazis on the right, there's Nazis who are not really Nazis, and then there's Nazis like my Nazis who maybe just do it because they're rich and bored.
Exactly, the rich bored Nazis.
Yeah, and maybe those are not really the Nazis that you need to worry about, but they're still Nazis. But also, you know, Clarissa, who's, you know, kind of the ringleader, the socialite, like, you know, this dame, this lady Bellman. She's gonna be an interesting character going forward. I can promise you that, because she's a lot more. She's not. Like, I didn't want people to, because Nazis are kind of like, as villains as well, they're kind of cliche.
Yeah, overplayed. So really, yeah.
I just want it to make it clear that these are not like your
these are your grandpappy's Nazis. These are
there's nuance to this stuff, and Clarissa, yeah. You know, she's playing the long game, but it's playing with these ideas that are maybe appealing still to some people.
It's like tropes. It's like classic tropes, you know, like you have the kind of ideas of the Nazis always being the bad guys and stuff like that, and of course they are the bad guys in this book, but they're the bad guys for different reasons. They aren't the bad guys for your classic, you know, white supremacist Aryan kind of thing. They're bad guys, as you said, for being rich bored people who or just happen to subscribe to some of the aspects of the Nazi lifestyle, which is another, as you said, it's a very satirical thing, and it works really well in the first kind of few issues of the book. Another thing as well I want to touch on is the fact as well, the villain of the third issue is an IRA, ex-IRA member, right? And I was looking at that, and I think I have the third issue on PDF, and I obviously got a chance to read quickly through it, and not spoiling too much. It's an interesting thing of having something that is such a, even now, a poignant and very taboo subject almost, and you design that's who the villain's going to be, or that's who the bad guy, whoever Eric's going to be hunting down this issue is going to be, his contract. Like, why, again, as I said with why Nazis, why go for something that is so almost brave and so controversial at the same time as a villain?
Well, you kind of said it yourself. Like, it's a taboo. I'll just go with the taboo.
Yeah.
And it's not just for shock value. It's just because it's interesting. And I don't believe in taboos.
I can definitely tell that. Yeah, I was going to say.
So, but it's interesting because at the same time, like, it creates a lot of interest in one way or another. Yeah. And I think it's fun to play with that.
I definitely agree with you.
It makes people tick. Yeah.
Yeah, I totally agree. I believe it definitely is. You're pressing people's buttons, but almost in the right way. You know, it's the whole thing of no coverage, or like bad coverage or bad press is better than good. Obviously, there's not been any bad press so far, but like the ideas and the controversies that are in the book are definitely causing people to be drawn towards it, but for all different sorts of reasons. And assumably, like, you knew that going in, though, right? Like, you would have known that this is definitely might tick some people off, but it's going to appeal to other people who know it's satire.
Yeah. Also, it's going to be fun. It's going to be fun to play with these concepts. And at the same time, these are not, like, what I'm really interested in is, and you picked up on this, and I'm so glad that you feel that way, is this, they're arseholes. Also, yeah. They're people, you know, it's the humanity that interests me. They're not just avatars for ideas. Like, so Rooker, the villain in the third issue, he's not a villain because
he
was in the IRA. You know, he's just in the IRA.
Yeah. But he's also just a bad guy. He's just a bad dude who happened to be associated. Yeah.
Yes, but also he's quite a charming dude at the same time. Like, and you might want to, you know, hang out in his pub for a pint or two. He might have some interesting stories. And isn't that quite compelling that someone who's a complete monster can still be so compelling? And I think that's quite interesting in a way that, you know, we're drawn to people for, you know, people are not just a monolith. And, you know, characters are not a monolith. Yeah. They've got like these shades, and maybe you hate certain aspects of them, but then you're really attracted to other aspects. And I think that's really interesting.
It's probably what makes Eric such an interesting character, as you said, because there is a lot of bad aspects to him, but there's also a lot of good. And it's like he's one step away from being, as you said, like a Spider-Man or like a hero. He's like one step away from that if his life had just went down a different path.
Yeah.
And I love that. I love the idea of it's a very subverting of trope and expectations, because it means that, because as you said, he exists in this gray area, as we've talked about before, that you never know what he's going to do next. And that's what's great. It makes him spontaneous, it makes him interesting, and it allows you a lot of freedom as a writer, I assume, to be able to take him in different directions.
Definitely. The one thing that you know about him is that he's gonna try his best to help Matty,
his sister family. Yeah.
Everything else, everything else is up for...
up for debate at this point.
Yeah, that's for debate. Like, he's based off this idea of active nihilism.
Yep.
Where you've got values, but you still try and give your life meaning somehow, and you just happen to decide what the meaning is. You know,
just happen to be a hatman.
Yeah. But it's so funny at the same time, because I've heard like people who have issues with some of what Eric does or says or things. Even though, like, it's so puzzling to me, because he's a complete maniac, and I don't understand why you would ever, you know, want him to be a role model. Like, he literally isn't. He says it himself. But it's interesting as well, because like back to you being okay with certain aspects of our character, but not so much with others. A lot of some readers will be okay with the fact that this is a 16-year-old who's an assassin and does drugs, and that's fine. You can make a comic about that, but then he can't also like make a rape joke.
Yeah, there's a very
that's so fascinating. It's like, but that's okay.
As if people have their very own weird ideals of hypocrisy and how that works, and I feel like, although like this book toes a very fine line, and it does it, as you said, you do it almost with like expert precision because you know exactly what you're doing. You obviously said you're no stranger to the fact that a lot of the subject you talk about is taboo. But at the same time, you make it in such a way that the characters are charming enough that you're able to just squeak by and get away with it. And it's why I honestly really like the book. I enjoyed what I've read so far, and I'm really hoping you keep up with it. Like, I hope it's not one of these things of like you have to end it because of some sort of controversy or whatever. It's a genuinely interesting comic, and okay, all the characters in it.
It's never done with ill intent. Exactly. That's what keeps my mind at peace. Like, I know. Yeah. It's always like in good spirits and like tongue in cheek as hell,
which is great, which is always awesome. Speaking of almost the tongue in cheek aspects of it, okay, so this is going to be an interesting one, and I don't know how many people maybe have asked this or kind of thought about it. Is the costume designer Bussard? Where did that come from? Because obviously that thing it obtains some aspects of kind of heroes we've seen before, but in a weird and interesting way, it looks entirely different. Where did you come up with the idea?
Do you mean the costume itself?
Yeah, like his costume itself. Look yeah. The look of it.
Or where he gets it.
Both, kind of both. Like, almost obviously the way how he gets it, the story, but also the way it looks as well.
Okay, the look, I designed it when I was at uni. And the idea was, I don't know, like, I just had this idea of a character with blades on his arms. I thought that was really cool. And then I gave him a costume, and I thought, let's make it really practical. So it's basically a modified motorbike jacket, and the mask just kind of comes from, again, like it's a leather mask with a breathing piece and goggles, and then the scarf. So it's like a gypsy ninja type of vibe. The thing, I think what you're referring to might be that the color scheme is very reminiscent of Spider-Man.
Yeah.
And the thing is that those also happen to be the colors of the
Union Jack. Yeah.
But I acknowledge the similarities there. I hope it's different enough.
It definitely is.
But I'm still thinking that maybe, like, yeah, if anyone's got any other suggestion on how to change the color scheme and just kind of pull a Daredevil on Buzzard, like you can go from the classic yellow to iconic red, I'm open to suggestions. But
I love
I love
the idea how you said it. It is a Union Jack, but it's a Union Jack in the most satirical way possible. Like, yeah, it's not like he has the Union Jack spread across his chest, like, or a shield or whatever it is. It's this kind of has similar colors to the country that I live in, because obviously Eric himself says, you know, I adore Britain, I adore London, but we're a shithole, we're different, we're weird, everything's terrible here, but I love it anyway.
And it's so funny as well, because a lot of people like have bashed it. Well, not a lot, but some people have bashed it for being pro-nationalist, which boggles my mind, because if you actually read it, it's clearly like satirical and sarcastic. And like, he doesn't love it because Britain is the best country in the world. He loves it because it's a shithole.
Exactly, he loves it,
and that's brilliant.
Exactly, it works though, right? Realist. Yeah, it works for his character. It works for his character. It works for the character of Eric and how he is. As you said, he is this nihilist. He is this guy who goes through life and only cares about really his sister. But he's like, well, I do like the country I live in, and I get away with a lot of shit here. I probably wouldn't anywhere else. And these are my people. I love it.
Yeah, I love it.
It's great. I enjoy the fact of it. Obviously, is it go for yourself? No, you continue. Go for it.
Oh no! I was just gonna mention where he gets the costume is like on this black market app, which I think is another element that I'd love to develop, because basically Amazon for
the underground.
For the criminal world. That's probably next. Like, I don't know if Talmud, which is what the app is called, doesn't exist yet, but it might very soon. I mean, I don't see why not. Why wouldn't you have an Amazon app for if you just have the right code? Anyway, sorry, I cut you off.
No, don't worry about it. It's an interesting idea. As I said, it's that kind of thing of like, it's a concept that is slightly foreign, but also hits close to home, because you have stuff like the dark web and all that kind of stuff, but they also kind of, as you said, it's all satire. It's not you're saying, oh, this is stuff that people should go out and do, like people should go and buy guns off the... No, you're making fun of it. You even let the characters like, oh yeah, I could buy it off of this, but I'd rather make this phosphate stuff at home, it's cheaper. It's all satire, and it's all funny, it's all tongue-in-cheek, and that's the best thing about the book, is that it doesn't take itself too seriously. It isn't trying to be gritty, crime thriller, but it has gritty aspects, but isn't trying to be gritty itself. One thing I'd like to ask as well is, are we going to see Eric in Scotland soon, or has he already been in, is that on the cards, kind of more in depth?
Who did you talk to?
Oh,
you've got no idea about this, do you? Like,
No. I'm just
asking. Okay, well, there may be a storyline coming up soon that's got a lot to do with Scotland, let's say.
Ooh.
And I can't really say a lot more that, but like Eric's family, it's not who we think they are. They're, mm-hmm. They're technically orphans,
but they have their mother. Yeah.
But that's not too clear, right? Mm-hmm. And Scotland might have something to do with it.
Oh, I'm interested. You've piqued my curiosity. You've definitely piqued my curiosity. So obviously, I'd like to after the success of issue 3. Obviously, speaking of kind of the future of Buzzard, what is the future for Buzzard? Is it going to be collected into kind of a volume one? Are you going to keep going, like maybe get 5-issue arc and then kind of do that? What is the future for you as a writer with your character, with Buzzard?
Who knows, man?
Always good stuff.
Wish me luck. I don't know. My biggest hope would be to find a publisher. I think that would really help a lot, because it would help me with all the things that I'm not good at, like, which is promoting, and then I could just like focus on the creative process and bring it forward, because it's meant to be an ongoing series. If a publisher likes it, that'd be absolutely amazing. If not, I'll continue on Kickstarter issue after issue. The first 5 issues are meant to create to be collectible as a trade paperback. So there's going to be quite a nice arc. You'll see it shaping up with quite a big change coming up for Eric as well, as the consequences of him becoming a super assassin become more and more dangerous, and he's forced to make a choice about what to do moving forward. More and more enemies,
popping up out the ground,
pop out the gutter, and life becomes a lot more complicated. But the idea is to keep it going as an ongoing series, because I've got it's a generational journey in my mind of seeing these two characters, the Lincoln family, Matty and Eric, growing up, and what happens to them. I really hope I'll be able to do that. I don't know.
Well, I hope you will be able to as well. I hope you will be able to as well, because I think Buzzard has a very promising future ahead of it, and people seem to really like it. And I'm also one of the people that really like it. And overall, if you haven't seen it, you should definitely check it out. So I've unfortunately run out of questions to ask you here, Andrew. Right. And before I kind of let you go and leave you, is there anything else that you'd like to plug? Is there anything else you're working on, or is it only kind of the Kickstarter at the moment? Is there anything else you'd like to kind of plug at the moment for yourself?
No. This is me here. Please check out the Kickstarter for Buzzard. It's still running for 2 weeks. Well, I don't know when this is going to be, when this is going to go on YouTube. But yeah, check out, go on Kickstarter and see if the monster's there.
Exactly.
It might be, and then you might want to check it out. Other than that, I just want to plug my artist in case you want to, you ever need an artist, you know, go for Ezequiel Assez or the cover artist Samuele Zardinoni. They're both amazing people, amazing artists. They do incredible work, and you'll never regret approaching them.
That's great. I'm loving you being able to back your creative team. It's always nice to see. It's always nice to see.
Oh, yeah. They're phenomenal.
Yeah. So I believe that's all we have time for today on the BGCP December podcast. Thank you for joining us, Andrea.
Thanks so much.
No worries, man. It's been a pleasure to have you. You can find Andrea's Kickstarter for issue 3 of Buzzard on the Kickstarter website. Is there a Kickstarter link? Is there anything that people need to know? Is it just look up Buzzard issue 3 Kickstarter? Like, what are they looking for when they look it up?
Yeah, if you go on kickstarter.com, search Buzzard, it should be there.
There we go. So you can find us on Facebook at BGCP Comic Con and BGCP December Podcast. We're also on Twitter as BGCP Comic Con. Do you have any socials that you would like to plug, Andrea, before we go?
Oh, yeah, thanks. Facebook.com/WolfCaveComics. Instagram, it's at WolfCaveComics. And Twitter is at ComicsWolf.
That's great. Well, you should guys check out for the latest updates on Buzzard and any of Andrea's upcoming work. For ourselves, however, you can find the latest news, reviews, interviews, and Toy Mart dates as lockdown eases on the Big Glasgow Comic Page website. I hope that everyone has enjoyed listening to Andrea. So goodbye, and everybody, I'll see you on the next page.
Cheers.
Thank you for listening to Disassembled. You can find more news and reviews on BigGlasgowComicPage.com. And don't forget, you can also find us on Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube as BGCP Comic Con. Make sure you also subscribe on the podcast provider of choice for new episodes every week.